My family's recorded history in terms of a European recording goes back to the early 1820s when one of the pioneers from the Anglo side of the family, James Ainslie, arrived here with sheep for the Campbell family.
Familiar names.
Very familiar name in Canberra. Everybody knows Mount Ainslie and Ainslie, the suburb and the school and so on. And he's my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, was guided here by an Ngambri woman. She's only known in the history books as Ainslie's Lubra. It's a very disparaging term. She was given to him by the neighbouring Wallabaloo people, the people who today identify as Ngunnawal. In fact, the Wallabaloo speak the Ngunnawal or Ngunnawal language. And they had this woman, they'd stolen her from the Ngambri area and dragged her back to their country. And then when Ainslie came around herding for all intent and purpose, they thought were clouds on legs. And they were so scared of Ainslie because they thought he was the spirit of a dead black person because he was white. He had all these white convicts with him and horses and strange things, and they'd actually run up trees to escape him. But then they eventually sacrificed this woman to him. And you put yourself in her shoes just for a minute. Here she was being sacrificed to a white person she thought was a spirit and threatened with death if she didn't take him away to her country on the Limestone Plains. And so she did. And they arrived over here, and the first place they camped was at what is known today as Corroboree Park, at the Corroboree Tree. And I dare say my great-great-great-grandmother was conceived under that tree. And she was the first Anglo-Aboriginal person born in the area, a lady named Juna Mingo, who we affectionately know as Nanny. And so Nanny was the first daughter in a long chain of daughters. And Nanny had a daughter, one of 11 children, whose name was Sarah Duncan McCarthy. And Sarah was given that name because when her mother died, she was about 3 or 4 years of age. And she was given and fostered out to the McCarthy and the Duncan families. And so they gave her both surnames. And she married a Ngurrmul man, another Wolgaloo-speaking man. Our language is Wolgaloo. And she hooked up with Black Dick Lowe from Kyandra. And they similarly had 11 children.
Wow.
And one, big families back then. And one of those children was Florence Ellen Lowe. And so there you have another daughter in the chain. And then Florence Ellen Lowe had a daughter. His name was Adelaide McClelland. She married a fellow named Samuel McClelland from Goulburn. And then...
Because it's the maternal lines that are important, isn't it?
Maternal line always important, particularly in Aboriginal terms, because you can actually prove your birth mother, but not necessarily your father. A man might have several wives, and if somebody was visiting, you'd say, oh, look, borrow this wife. You know, I hope she keeps you warm. Sort of thing. That was the custom. You know, sex and conception were not related. A child was a blessing, and that's the way that things were done. So always down the maternal line for our people. But then Florence Ellen Lowe had Adelaide McClelland. Adelaide McClelland had a lady named Leslie Kellyan, my mother. Well, my mother grew up not knowing her Aboriginal background. In fact, her mother, Adelaide McClelland, was stolen from her mother from the Brungle Mission. And she and her brothers and sisters, who were 7 children, were farmed out to Catholic orphanages in Goulburn, St. Joseph's and St. John's. And then from there, the girls were removed from the St. Joseph's orphanage up to La Perouse in Sydney. And that's where my grandmother, Adelaide, met my grandfather, a fellow named Leslie Kellyan. And they subsequently married, but my grandmother and her siblings vowed never, ever to reveal their Aboriginal background because they didn't want the same thing to happen to them, that their children would be taken from them. Their mother died brokenhearted within weeks of her 7 children being removed. Yeah. Oh,
it's a terrible story.
Yeah, yeah. But that's history. Now, and we put that behind us and we progress forward from there. So my mother went on to become Australia's national figure skating champion and never known by the... I guess she would have been like a Cathy Freeman in her day in terms of ice skating. Brilliant
but
ice skating.
She didn't know about her Aboriginal heritage.
She thought her great-great-grandmother was an island princess.
Oh.
And that was the story in the family. And it wasn't until I produced a play about the massacre at Mile Creek that I discovered my Aboriginal background. And that's about 30 years ago now, I suppose, 25, 30 years ago. I toured that play for 10 years through schools and so on. And
did that come as a shock to you?
I knew there was something there, but we were dealing it then with the Director General of the Office of Aboriginal Affairs in New South Wales putting that story onto the school syllabus. And my wife said, "I'm sure Shane has Aboriginal background." And this fellow checked it out and he phoned. He said, "Mate, your Aboriginal princess, your island princess comes from Canberra way." I said, "Oh, well, Australia's a bloody big island." So
you were obviously interested in the Indigenous story before you even knew about your connection.
Correct.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. It's always been ingrained. It's always been there. And when I found this out, I went straight to IATSIS, and IATSIS said, "You know you're from here." I said, "What do you mean?" And we said, "Well, civic."
Just up the road.
See, Ngambri means cleavage, the space between a woman's breasts, and that's Black's Mountain, as it was called, and Mount Ainslie. They dropped the S for the sake of political correctness or convenience, whatever. Mm-hmm. That was a very, very major area for our people. And when Joshua John Moore came to Canberra, the first land grant recipient in 1821, he named his property Canberra after the local people.
Yeah, now you bring up this, obviously one of the things I want to talk to you about is the sort of long-running dispute about whether it's the Ngunnawal people or the Ngambri people who are the traditional owners of this area.
Yes.
The ACT government recognises the Ngunnawal people.
Yes.
So how does the Ngambri people fit into that? And the federal government that actually recognises the Ngambri people. So it's all very confusing.
Yes. I think, to be honest with you, it's deliberate confusion of John Stanhope and then pig-headed ignorance. Rules after that, and it's been a really tough thing. See, our borders were natural borders, rivers, and our borders were the Yarr or Yass River, as it's now known, to the north, the Goodradigbee River up in the Brindabellas, to the west, and to the south is the Murrumbidgee, and to the east is the Shoalhaven. And they defined our country, and that was Ngambri country, always was Ngambri country, and always will be Ngambri country.
But wasn't it Ngunnawal country?
No. There's no such thing as Ngunnawal people, for a start. Ngunnawal is the language of the Wallabaloo people from up around Boorowa way.
But there are many people who refer to themselves as Ngunnawal people.
There are. There are quite a few. A lot of the people who identify as Ngunnawal too are descendants of a group of people who were banished from their country in Port Stephens.
See, because if I get a Ngunnawal person in here, they're going to tell me that Ngambri is a clan within Ngunnawal. It's a family
Definitely
clan.
Definitely not. Completely different language. Completely different
Isn't
language.
Isn't it possible to have a family clan with a different language within a greater tribe of people?
That's the sort of political issue and the political divide that's been built by the likes of our former chief minister. And it's absolutely incorrect. You know, the Ngambri people have always been here. This has been our land. This is the spirit woman in our land has always been there, and it's never been any different. Where a lot of the confusion came from was a fellow named Norman Tyndale, who in the 1970s came up with a map of Australian Aboriginal territories. And essentially what the man did is he drew straight lines on a map, no regard for natural borders, and he lumped in disparate groups of people gave them single names. And this has caused arguments all over the country. It's not just in this part of the world that this sort of thing happens. It's in Sydney, it's in Wollongong. You know, ask Luigi O'Donoghue, for example, about the difficulties of identifying in her country. But the one thing I do know is that I can tell you that my lineage here is maternal. It's clearly identified. It's well recorded. And so nobody can really deny me of my connection to country. And it's a very large responsibility when you know who you are and where you come from.
Okay, but if we were to go back to this question, if we sat a group of Ngunnawal people in a room and a group of Ngambri people
yes.
and said, "We'd really just like you to work this out,"
mm-hmm.
would it ever work?
I would say I can prove my connection to country, can you?
And if they could also prove their connection to country, then are we at an impasse?
If they could prove their connection to country, well, I'd say lay the cards on the table.
But until
I know that they could lay the cards on the table in, for example, maybe Boorowa or Gundagai, you know, in land that wasn't customarily Ngambri country.
So in the meantime, I guess we'll all just have to keep trying to work out what to do.
It's not that hard. It isn't that hard, particularly from the standpoint of governments or people who would like to identify and acknowledge, you know, the owners of the land. I would say to them, do your due diligence, do your research, and before you make an acknowledgement, and make sure that you're right before you go plastering signs up saying welcome to wherever. So it's been a very, very tough thing, and it's hard for people who are not part of the area to understand. It's hard for the average Canberran. The average Canberran doesn't even know that Canberra is named after the Ngambri people. So,
but I do think the average Canberran wants to do the right thing.
I do too.
And I think it's hard for them to know what the right thing is.
Yes.
So thank you for helping shed some light on it.
Oh, that's my pleasure.